Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everyone. My name is Raphael Wurm. I'm a neurology resident at the Medical University of Vienna and a member of the Neuroimaging Management Group of the Scientific Panel. And I welcome you very much to this month's special topic on spinal cord imaging, where we want to tackle this underrepresented field of clinical neurology from the imaging perspective. It's my very great honor and pleasure to have with me today Professor Thurnherr from the Medical University of Vienna. She is a professor of radiology and an esteemed member of many international organizations. She has many research focuses, but they are mostly infections and inflammatory diseases of the CNS. She is also very knowledgeable in advanced MR imaging techniques and spinal imaging. She has been giving many lectures, and I'm sure many of you have heard her talk before. And today she's going to talk to us about imaging of spinal cord ischemia. Welcome, and very nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to talk about spinal cord ischemia and the imaging of that today. It is often a typical presentation. People present with sudden onset of bilateral neurological dysfunction and often pain. But sometimes this pain can be missing and the presentation can be misleading, making it more challenging to differentiate it clinically and giving even more weight to imaging. Let's start us off with, what would you say, how good is basic spinal cord imaging, say a basic MRI or even a CT, in differentiating the common causes of this symptom? So ischemia from, say, transverse myelitis or compressive myelopathy?
I think the answer is pretty clear and straightforward. The imaging of the choice is definitely MR imaging. So there is no point in even talking about acute CT in distinguishing these diseases that you just mentioned. The only problem is, in a clinical setting, that MRI will be negative in 50% of the cases of acute ischemia. So neuroradiologists, on one hand, should know that even if MRI is normal, ischemia is not excluded in a proper clinical setting. On the other hand, neurologists should know that too, because they should refer this patient again to neuroradiology. Once I see something in the spinal cord, the differentiation is possible from myelitis, from demyelinating diseases, from any other causes. The problem is always the acute setting when MRI is negative. Then it should be repeated, because if you still have spinal symptoms and you have a negative MRI, then you have a problem, right? Then we have to solve this together. So repeat in 24 hours and then see if we can diagnose spinal cord ischemia.
Yeah, that's a very good point. 24 hours is sufficient, or would you wait longer in selected cases?
No, I think it would be okay, like 24 hours. Between 24 and 48 hours, then spinal cord ischemia really should show an MRI. So it's not exactly 24, you know, kind of like 1 to 2 days. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we're good at doing this, I think, for brainstem infarcts, where we know that sometimes they show up later, but it's not that much common knowledge, I think, for spinal MRI. Can you walk us through the optimal MRI protocol that you would run for suspected ischemia?
So first to say, you know, like everybody likes brain imaging, even in neuroradiology community, because there's so many advanced imaging techniques that you can add or skip or something. In spine, we are kind of like a little bit limited. You know, all these advanced techniques do not work so well for the spinal cord as for the brain. So the normal protocol would be for spinal cord ischemia, sagittal T1, sagittal T2, sagittal stir, and then something axial if you see a pathology. There is no point in doing axial imaging if you don't see anything on sagittals. And of course, if you do this, ideally that would be diffusion-weighted image. So there is no real perfusion and other things, but diffusion, not many institutions will do that, and we started very early. So that would be the protocol. Altogether, I would say not more than 20 minutes. It goes relatively fast, like 4 minutes each sequence. After 20 minutes, you're done.
That's good to know, because it's sometimes a bit of a pushback to get the spinal imaging. I think it's also from your side or your colleague's side, it's much more common to get the MRI of the brain, and it's a bigger conversation for the spinal cord. You mentioned DWI. We're all aware of how well this works in the brain. What are the problems, technical and from the interpretation side, when it comes to the spinal cord?
Yeah. We started doing this like almost 20 years ago, if I correctly remember. The first publication on usefulness of diffusion in spinal cord ischemia was published by German colleagues, actually, Gass, if I correctly remember. I think he's even neurologist, in 2000. So now we're 2024, so 20 years. The problem is that this is a special sequence where movement is disturbing. So all diffusion techniques are sensitive to movements. And if you think of a cervical spinal cord, then you are swallowing and you are breathing. So the spinal cord is moving, and this creates artifacts and problems for the spinal cord diffusion. In Vienna, we started very early, actually. I started that myself. I was very much interested in that. We did a little series, I think 6 patients, but still it's not a very common disease. And we realized you can see spinal cord ischemia on diffusion, like in the brain, but it even very early, after like 30 minutes. The problem is it will stop being restricted after 1 week. So basically, I will make it simple. You have time for brain ischemia to see it 3 weeks, right? Because diffusion will be restricted for 3 weeks. So if you don't know what it is and you need an MR for spine, after a week, it's no point, because it will not be restricted anymore. So the restrictions is much shorter. We don't really understand why is it so, but basically you need 1 week, or you have a 1 week window to have a positive diffusion. Yes. And it's usually very blurred. And sometimes I even have to convince neurologists, yes, I see it. It's really restricted. So not many people will do this. I think dedicated institutions with neurology and neurosurgery will probably already have the sequence.
Fascinating. 2 questions that come up. Is the field strength important? Is there a big advantage of 3 Tesla over 1.5?
Not really. I can answer that. Some people have great diffusion sequences because they worked on it with a physicist and improved it on 1.5. That's going to still be okay.
And can you maybe speculate or comment, what's the role of artificial intelligence when it comes to removing of these artifacts? Is there something we can expect in the near future?
Well, I don't know. I would be a little bit skeptical about that. I don't know that we can do this. Of course, we need more physicists to work on a sequence, not really artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence should help us to see better, kind of like, you know, not to see so much noise. I wouldn't say that that's going to go in that direction, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy if I'm wrong and if we have something better.
You already briefly touched on it. Can you walk us through the time sequence of how do these changes evolve in the different sequences? If I have a spinal cord ischemia, you already mentioned I have about a 1 week window of opportunity to see it on DWI. It might not be there after 24 hours, but it's probably going to be there after 48 hours. What's happening to the signal afterwards?
Okay, so let's say this is an acute situation. Let's put it a very typical situation. Patient has an aortic repair, because these are most patients who will come with a spinal cord ischemia, okay? Put them into the MR. What I'm trying to see is something which is very common, and that it's a hyperintensity in the ventral part of the spinal cord. This is the most common type. This is called old eyes or snake eyes. So because the anterior gray matter is the most sensitive to ischemia. So that would be, the other possibility would be to see some kind of a V-shape or U-shape. So either you set the eyes, or you have a V-shape, or you have the U-shape. This would be the ideal, most common situation. And then you would give contrast, which you basically should not, because it will not enhance. Means in the first week, there will be no enhancement, and we usually don't do this. If I recognize these findings and it goes into the diagnosis of spinal cord ischemia, then I will not give contrast. If it's a week later and I'm not sure anymore, and demyelination or other processes are in the differential diagnosis, then I would give contrast and see kind of like a hazy enhancement. And there are other confirmatory signs. So the signs that I describe are the typical signs. So I mean, you really see it. I see it on MR. What I could do is I could look at additional things to still diagnose spinal cord ischemia if it's not so typical. And additional things will be, I look at the vertebral bodies, because I could have concomitant infarction of the vertebral bodies at the same level of the spinal cord abnormalities. So that's important. Or I should look at the vessels, which I always do. So I do MR angiography and look if I don't have a vertebral dissection, because vertebral artery dissection would also give me a spinal cord infarction. and sometimes not looking very typical. So these are additional signs that I'm kind of like chasing in MR to be sure that I'm looking into ischemia. And that would be it. And then later, of course, in a chronic stage, because you asked me for time changes, I will see like a atrophy of the spinal cord, but a short one, like kind of like a tailoring of the spinal cord. It will not be nicely straight. It will be spinal cord, which is thick and then thinner and then thick again. Then I know something happened there later, before. I hope I did not make it too complicated.
No, that was very informative. And it gives me a good way to ask another question that I wanted to ask. Sometimes we see these patients in the emergency room. And as you mentioned, oftentimes they do come as a referral after aortic repair, but sometimes they don't. And then we do an MRI. How confident are you at judging the cause from the first MRI? Is there any way to tell if it's an infarction or if perhaps it is an aortic dissection that we're missing?
Yeah. Well, you can't really see the big difference when I see spinal cord ischemia. Then I don't know from imaging what is the cause, you know. So if it's aortic repair, I will probably see something in the aorta, or we usually have this information. If it's hypotonia because of any unknown reason, then I don't see it. I can't say. I just see that it's spinal cord ischemia. The only thing that I'm also looking at is a special type of spinal cord ischemia that's called fibrocartilaginous embolism. These are usually children with a sport that has a hyperreflection. So the part of the disc, interestingly, they will have a disc herniation, and the part of the nucleus pulposus will get into the vasculature and make a spinal cord ischemia. So if I have children with the spinal symptoms and say, somebody say sport, I will always go and ask what kind of sport, if it's like a volleyball or, I don't know, surfer myelopathy would be a cause. And then I look specifically for the disc, and if I see a small little disc, and then spinal cord ischemia, then I can make one and one, two, and say, okay, this I don't like. This could be a fibrocartilage embolism. In all the other causes, I cannot really say from MR, where does it come from? That's your job. or discussion among us.
No, we're happy to keep part of our job, of course. But for the brain, we have, when it's hypotonia, right, you have this, the watershed type. Then when you have a central embolism, you maybe have it in different segments. Can you do the same with spinal cord? Like, do you see a different sort of distribution when it's hypotonia versus, say, an aortic dissection?
No, I can't really say that. It would be too much. It would be too optimistic to say based on a type, if it's a central type. Usually I try to guess by looking these confirmatory signs. You know, I'm looking for vertebral bodies, then I'm looking for vessels, then I'm looking for disc, all the additional signs to say, okay, this is probably this, but I can't, it's not like in the brain, if it's ventral is this, if it's dorsal is this. It doesn't work like this.
Right. Okay, that's very good to know. And then the next question that I have is, say we suspect it's embolism and it's spinalis anterior, anterior spinal artery infarction. Would you always add some kind of angiography to that imaging?
Only if it's cervical spine, because then I'm looking for dissection. If it's thoracic or lumbar spine, probably not. It's very difficult to look for spinal vessels. That we mostly do if we look for, let's say, other vascular disorders, like a spinal dural fistula, because then I need a dynamic MRI to look, you know, like how blood is going from arteries to veins. For spinal cord ischemia, I can't see, you know, it's not like in the brain. I can't see the thrombus in the vessel or occluded vessel. So that's not what we do, unfortunately. Not yet.
Maybe the future will bring that. And that brings me to another question, because we're obviously used very much to treating strokes aggressively and early. Is there a similar way to judge the time course of the ischemia when you have the equivalent of a flare and the DWI? Is there something we can use to say, well, this is maybe only 6 hours old, maybe this is 12 hours old?
We could. We usually don't do this because there is no thrombectomy, at least not that I know, for spinal cord ischemia. Maybe somebody is experimenting on this. So this doesn't help so much because we don't do flare for spinal cord. Flare is fantastic sequence for the brain, but not for the spinal cord. We have done this research, so we know that. It's usually T2 or STIR it's not like I see it on diffusion and I don't see it on other things. It must be so old. Yeah, we don't do this. Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe it's an interesting research topic to see. But this is a rare disease, so it's very difficult to get to certain numbers to make then conclusions. So you can only say, I had a case. If I see it on diffusion, I usually see it on a T2.
I understand. That's very good to know. Yeah, because of course, people are also thinking about thrombolysis. Thrombectomy, as you mentioned, is technically very challenging, but thrombolysis is something you can just push. And for that, obviously, it would be nice to have any sort of indication in what time window you have, even though, of course, there are no established time windows for thrombolysis of these kinds of infarctions.
Yeah, but the problem is, Rafael, if MR is negative, should we do this like in the brain? It's negative, spinal symptoms are here, it's nothing else. We did not find any tumor, anything, let's go. So what are we going to do with these cases? They are negative, 50% of those. So
absolutely.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. No, I think it depends on the clinical presentation, but it's something that I have on the back of my mind. But as you said, of course, these cases are rather rare outside of aortic repair, where obviously you cannot do anything like thrombolysis. They are really, really rare. Maybe to wrap this a little bit up and to tie a knot on it, do you have any sort of outlook on the future? Where do you think we're going with imaging of spinal cord ischemia? Look into your glass ball, if you will.
Ah, yes, I would wish that diffusion would be better and it would be something, routine. And of course, I would love to do perfusion of the spinal cord. That would be very interesting. We tried a little bit with tumors. This was still very bad. So that would be something that I would like to see, good perfusion of the spinal cord and then start looking into tumors, demyelination, spinal cord ischemia. I would be interesting to see, something like penumbra of the spinal cord. I don't know if that even exists, but that would be very interesting. So that would be my wish if I could place a wish to have a good perfusion of the spinal cord and then look into these diseases.
Yeah, it's a shame that our listeners can't see how much you're lighting up when you're talking about this topic. There's another question that I want to ask. What do you think is the most common problem in ordering spinal cord imaging? Like, what do you see neurologists order way too much, and what do you think, why don't you order this a bit more?
But you do. I don't know. I don't see a problem that you would probably have more spinal cord imaging that we would say yes in acute setting. I think this is on a neuroradiological side. People have to understand that sometimes it's very difficult if you're a neurologist and the symptoms are not as perfect as in the book. So sometimes neuroradiologists get annoyed and say, no, this is not perfect. Why would you say that? And they should be actually 6 months on the other side. I always say that and think like, wow, how difficult it is if it's not perfect. So there should be more saying yes to the acute spinal cord imaging. I really think that because I like spinal cord image and it's really difficult. It's difficult to know where you are going to. So I think, you should push more. I hope my colleagues are not listening to this podcast, but you have to say it's even better instead of, I'm always saying, talking too much and trying to convince me with all kinds of symptoms. The best is to say, I don't know. It is a case where I'm not sure where I'm going to. I have these symptoms. They don't fit to anything. I need imaging. I will be always ready to help. You know what I'm trying
to say? Yeah, I understand. Yeah. No, and of course, this is also
honest,
my experience.
Exactly. It's an honest situation. I don't know. The symptoms do not fit to anything, and I'm still looking for something. Or at least excluding is also a good choice. To exclude everything, it's also good news. It's not a bad news. It's a good news, right?
Oh, I agree. I think, sometimes, especially younger colleagues are a bit disheartened when the imaging comes back negative in that they think they ordered something that was not necessary. And I always tell them, if all of your MRIs come back positive, the only thing I can tell you is you're ordering too little.
Exactly. That's true. That's true. I like that one. Exactly. Means that you're kind of like too optimistic, or I don't know.
If you're so conservative that you only send the people where you're sure for imaging, then why do you do imaging?
Exactly.
You already know it.
Yeah. But on our side also should be this awareness, like it's okay if it's negative. We are helping, saying it's
absolutely
not this and that. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but this makes a lot of sense now in my head. I think it's something that is challenging for us clinically. It seems it's challenging for you guys as well, gals.
Yes, it is.
From the reading side. So I think there is this apprehension that we have in the community, basically, to order it, to read it. And then we do it a little bit too little, then nobody has the experience.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, no, yeah. I think that's a very good point. Just order more of it and say you don't know. And that's exactly the thing. Like, it's much easier to localize the lesion in the brain than it is in the spinal cord. And I've been wrong so many times with trying to judge the segments where I think something is. And then you maybe want to do the thoracic spine as well because you're not really sure. And then
you get mad and say, like, what do you really want? This one. But it should not, yeah. And also on our side, we also have challenges with people or maybe some institution where they do spinal cord and it's too thick. Then basically you have spinal cord only on one sequence, you know, like you have a one image and then it's bone already, you know. And I always keep saying, don't give me axial slices where I see the kidneys. I don't care. Somebody else would read this. I want a good image of the spinal cord itself, which is a 1 centimeter structure. So I think it's also on our side, many institutions, I don't want to, you know, talk bad about anybody, but this is bad imaging of the spinal cord. If you see a lot of lungs or kidneys or, I don't know, bones, you have to focus on a good image of the spinal cord. And this is what neuroradiologists should do. I do this because I love this imaging. It's interesting. But I see in private practices a lot of images. I'm thinking like, wow, it's impossible to say anything. Impossible.
Yeah, that's obviously a problem. Yeah. No, this has been wonderful to talk to you. It's very obvious how much you love imaging of the spinal cord.
Yes, indeed. I do. Yes.
Is there anything else you want to add?
Well, don't call me tomorrow with 2 new referrals. That's very...
All right. I will make sure not to do that.
No, you can do this anytime when you... Again, you can say, I'm not sure, and that's okay. That's good enough for me. Then I'll try to help.
Fantastic. That's a very good takeaway. I'll send this episode to all of my colleagues at our institution. So expect a new approach from them.
Yeah.
It has been wonderful to talk to you. This was Professor Turnhe again talking
to
us about
spinal
cord imaging. And I hope you tune in next week for another episode.
Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.